Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to another episode of IGN Unfiltered, our monthly interview show where we sit down with the best, brightest, most interesting minds in the video game industry. And today, this month's episode is a first. I have not one, but two excellent and fascinating minds, and they are inexplicably linked both biologically and professionally as well. Chad Moldenhauer, Jared Moldenhauer, they are two members of Studio MDHR, makers of the very, very excellent 2017 hit Cuphead, which if you haven't seen it, stop this video, go look it up on YouTube right now, and you will be immediately entranced. Everybody else, now that we're all caught up, you've unpaused. Guys, welcome. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having us. This is awesome.
So, the two of you have worked together, along with other family members, which we'll get to, on Cuphead. A 14-person team.
Yes.
You're done. The game's out. Everybody loves it. I want to walk through the whole story, because your story, even what little bit I know, is fascinating, so I want to learn a lot more right now. I want to start, though, rewinding and just asking, did you guys get along as kids? To be sitting here now, you made a game together. Was the relationship always good, the brotherly relationship?
Yeah, I don't think... I mean, there's always something. Like, sure, older brothers are bound to maybe
beat on you a little bit.
Beat on you just a little bit. Take out something. Like, maybe maybe you became the slave who had to run to hit the pause on the Sega Master System. But the one day you hit reset, well, he was just near the end of the game, like, a little bit of physical violence, but brotherly physical yes. violence occurred. But nothing that we hold any negative ill will towards each other.
And throughout life, we've always enjoyed, you know, most of the same things. And
oh, absolutely.
Talked the whole time, so it's been a...
So you've clearly, that was my next question, is did you guys grow up playing games? And it sounds like the answer is an absolute yes there.
Yes.
Yeah, 100%.
Or more like, did you guys grow up aside from playing games? Maybe is the correct question.
Well, what games and systems were in the house? What were I imagine probably you grew up, as I did, in the era of two-player co-op games, which you've just made one.
Yep.
Were those the popular ones in the house because you could both play, or...
I think initially the Sega Master System was like our mainstay and our that's how we got really into video games. It doesn't really have a ton of two-player
games. It wasn't really two-player oriented, which means that if there were, I'd always be second player, but also second player in life. Like, I'm going to take just one more turn, but yours is coming pretty soon. Pretty soon.
I'm gleaning from this that Chad, you're the older brother in this scenario.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, were you ostracized in the neighborhood because you had a Sega Master System and not a Nintendo?
Yes.
Because, you know, pre-Genesis, that was, you know, the battle lines were clear. Like, you had to have a Nintendo. Who had a Master System?
Yes. No, everybody we told was like, what is that? Like, we never even heard of that. Is that like a Sears Canada video game or something?
Except for Chris Madigan, the honorary Moldenhauer who did our soundtrack, lived down the street and also had a Master System. So there's something about that that brought us all together.
Yeah. So one of the members of your soundtrack artist is a lifetime friend.
Yes. Yeah. And we consider him a Moldenhauer. But yeah,
we've also got your wife as an artist and producer on the game.
Yes.
And then I think you were telling me earlier that you got a cousin or two.
Two cousins.
Two cousins on the project as well.
Yeah, Ryan and Tyler. Yeah.
That is. That
and all of us were, like, nearly located in the same place, but like it was common for us to have weekend after weekend of being on the same couch, playing the same games, watching the same movies. Like, so much easier to like communicate when you know and like all the very similar things.
Yeah.
Well, that was our crew, like our, main crew growing up.
Were you were you guys and the cousins of about the same age? So you're all kind of into the same stuff? Or?
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah, within 2 years of each other. Yeah,
yeah, that's awesome. So what did you guys want to be when you grew up? Because part of your story, which we're going to get to, is, you know, you've not been making games for your entire adult lives. So we'll get to that. But so what was the initial desire when you were growing up?
I think as younger kids, I definitely, and I think you did too, we didn't, at the time, we knew that we couldn't make games just because where we lived, you know, there's no games industry, and the idea of working on games was, like, impossible. But we had the fantasy of, like, how cool would it be if we made a game.
And the tools weren't good enough back then where you could do something from home, which you've now done.
Yes.
But... So yeah, it was a pipe dream.
Yeah, no, definitely a pipe dream. But we held on to it for all our lives. Like,
we held on to it as something that would be amazing to do. But I mean, I don't even know if I have an answer for the secondary. Like when I was a kid, what did I actually think I would have done when I'm older?
I did write a letter to Sega to design their next system.
That's true.
After
that
Genesis.
Is true.
Yeah.
Yep. I told them it should be the Tri-Genesis, and it would have three processors.
It probably would have gone better than the Saturn.
Yeah, which you think is funny, but then the Saturn came out.
So after either high school or college, I'm not sure how far your education goes. What did you guys end up doing? What were you guys before Cuphead and Studio MBHR came together?
I was for the longest time working for my father's company. Likely would have taken it over if Cuphead didn't sneak in there on a plan, but pouring concrete, doing construction work.
And I ran a small web design marketing firm, like a really like boutique company. So lots of designy stuff.
Interesting. So very, very white collar, very blue collar.
Yes.
You guys are, it's almost opposites in that regard.
Well, I started at the company.
Also did work construction with us for a long time. I think almost every Moldenhauer in that area, it's like a duty, like to fulfill your bloodline to do 1 year, but most people have done like five.
Right. If I go to your hometown, is the family name like well known as the business?
Absolutely.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, father and uncle, the name Moldenhauer could have been like the name for all of concrete, but... I think they had more intentions to keep like smaller companies and keep the quality higher, which is why also they still the voice murmurs of being like, we need to pour a wall or a basement, and they're like, get a Moldenhauer.
Well, the quality over quantity thing, it's funny, it passed
down to us.
I'm seeing where it's coming from in Cuphead. So construction and marketing firm, were you guys happy doing that? Doing your respective
I jobs? Like it.
Yeah.
I like laboring. Like, there's something about physically creating something and also about being out in the sun and fresh air daily that's really exciting to me. I also like, I'll learn to, but I hate exercising, but I like to be in shape. So then I'm like,
catch 22.
If I can get paid to like do something physical and then it kind of balances it out. But now I'm going to learn how to, like, shed the computer weight soon. Maybe he can teach me how to go to the gym.
Yes. And, yeah, I loved what I was doing, too. It was really designy. But I think both of us, we didn't have, like, we must escape our jobs and make something we love.
Well, that's, you know, because I can imagine maybe you would. So that leads perfectly to the next question, then, is where does Studio MBHR come from? Whose idea was it to actually go... Hey, we loved games as a kid. Let's do this. Where did this come from?
Well, I think the we always wanted to make a game just as that fantasy.
Yeah.
And then the real spark came after the initial indie game explosion. So Castle Crashers, Super Meat Boy, Braid.
So the 360 era.
Yes. And that we saw like these small teams working on these really cool games.
Yeah.
And you know, that sparked the conversation, what if we could do something like this?
Well, and because we had thought about this a lot of times before, we also, like, not a game, not a complete thing, not like Cuphead or was near ready to ship or anything, but had previously worked on
some prototypes.
Some prototypes, yeah. And like getting demo levels and a feeling and a design done for it. And it seemed impossible at that time to be like, you know, you'd be like, I kind of really like what we have here. This could potentially go somewhere. But there was no indie scene, so right. You could make meetings and do things. Like, he went down to
GDC in 2001, I think.
Yeah,
because this was way before the actual indie scene, right? This is when you needed to sign with a publisher and have a huge plan and no real... The only indie games at the time were, like, real one arcade.
I don't know if you were married or anything at the time. But like, nope. did your parents or family think you were insane? Where you're like, I'm going down to San Francisco to this game developer thing, and I'm not a game developer.
No,
not really. No? Not even a hesitation. Yeah. Just like a that sounds nice.
Yeah,
if you guys
want to
work
cool.
on a game, you should try that out.
When you started the studio, did your parents think you were insane, or because you're getting the whole family involved? Are they like, what are you doing? Or
well, it was never. Like, it was never thought from the beginning that we're like, we're going to name this Studio MDHR, and it's Studio Moldenhauer, which means we only employ Moldenhauers. We were just like, let's start a company and try to work on a game and work on a concept to something, and if we know it seems like something we want to do, we were determined to fulfill, like, that passion, that dream to be like, before we're dead, we're making a game that we like, irregardless of any size. Like, we would have finished a smaller game, shipped it out. If nobody heard about it, then I would have went back to pouring concrete and been like, I'm really glad we did that.
Yeah.
Yes. And it started really small. So there was no, like, we're going to start this Studio Moldenhauer company.
Right.
And, you know, everybody's working and this is awesome. It was just, you know, the two of us and a developer just prototyping and still working other jobs full time.
So tell me about these prototypes that you're talking about, Jared. Pre-Cuphead, pre-studio, when you were just sort of experimenting with, like, hey, can we do this?
Well, oddly enough, it was basically a running gun. So, I mean, like, that idea, I guess, from 2000 still somehow lingered or came back to us.
Yep.
But it was a different game, and we thought that it would get more of an audience at that point. We wanted to do 2D, but we're like, we got to get in somehow.
Yeah.
We're like, let's make a 3D game where we still get 2D side-scrolling levels, but interspersed is more of a 3D environment to explore, and we wanted to kind of get a contra feel within that, but sort of like a Robotron vibe of not quite top-down shooter, but keep that pacing up for the 3D sections.
You're ruining our next game idea.
But
I think the cool thing about that prototype was we still love traditional media and traditional art, so all of the textures for that game were hand-colored by pencil crayon.
Oh, wow.
So we kind of were going after what Yoshi's Island started with pixel art, but try to put that in as actual, like...
Yeah, I still think it actually looks... Especially if you date it back to being, like, 2000, I think it looks really cool.
Oh, I totally agree. Yeah, absolutely. So, start the company, and you were just doing the art yourself at first, is that correct?
Yeah, that was the whole idea. We were just going to do this as a small team. And we had, like, we came up with this super dream scope that was awesome. We knew we could never do it. So we just said, let's make this small little game. Mm. 8 bosses. It's just going
to
be...
Like, commit to being like, we will finish this game irregardless. It doesn't matter how much it takes us. It doesn't matter, like, if it catches on when it does. Like, we will just start this and see it to completion.
Yeah.
So at what point does Microsoft come into the picture as far as relative to your lives and where, you know, the going full time with the studio and leaving your jobs behind, where does it get serious?
It got, so we put the game out for IGF in 2013, and Microsoft contacted us shortly after seeing, like, the trailer.
Independent Games Festival.
Yes, the Independent Games Festival. And on Christmas Eve is when we got contacted of, like, hey, have you heard of the ID program? Maybe this is something we can talk about. And it took, you know, a few months, and we signed with Microsoft. But that wasn't, like, the big aha moment. We still wanted a smaller game. And then E3 2014 hit, and it was just that 4-second teaser.
Yeah.
And
We were all like, what the hell was that?
Yes. But it wasn't like this massive explosion. It was just like a good, you know, a good noise about the game to us. So we decided to make the game slightly bigger at that point. Fast forward to E3 2015, and the reaction to that was just like floored us.
Yeah, that I have it written down. Let's see, it was a 2.9 million views on that 2015 trailer.
Yes.
What, are you shocked by that? Or?
Well, you just shocked me now. Like, oh, that's almost 3 million views. Ha!
Well, that floored us so much that we started talking about, what if we went back to our dream scope that we had and started doing this? And what's it going to take?
Yeah.
Like, should we, you know... We can start looking at remortgaging the homes and quitting our jobs and kind of...
And that's what I want to zero in on. But go ahead, Jared. Yeah, please.
Yeah, it's just like having the opportunity and realizing to expand. Because when you initially talk, you go, the game could be like this big. But you're like, feasibly with us working full-time and doing something, let's aim for something that we'll complete.
Yeah.
But each one of the E3s was definitely like... We were always trying to pick something we were willing to part with. Like, we're making this game irregardless, but how much money can we just comfortably be like, this, we'll finish it, and then we walk away and whatever happens, happens.
Yes.
So each one of those times, it was like a more comfortable and logical way to be like, I think we can up
It seemed like
our
less or, risk.
To, yeah, it would be.
To us, it felt like less risk.
Less
so,
risk.
Okay, so... When Chris, I don't know if it's Chris Charla personally that calls you guys or reaches out, because he heads the idea at Xbox.
No, it was Alexi, but he's...
Okay,
yeah.
So you get... It doesn't feel serious right then when Microsoft has reached out, you know, made one of the major first party publishers.
We might have problems.
Yeah. No, it felt more serious as in this is so awesome that it's not gonna just
Yeah, like this
just
will be an official game.
Yeah, it'll be an official game now, but in our minds it was still this super small, tiny game that we were gonna finish. So it didn't trigger any, you know, bring in additional scope or anything.
That feeling of knowing the Or like being like, we're committed to finishing the small scope.
Yeah.
And then being like, we've already made peace with that 100%, that it was amazing to be like, oh, we're going to finish the small scope, and it's going to get published.
Yeah.
But it didn't, for some reason, change anything in our head where, at that point, to be like, and now let's triple the scope just because we got signed.
Yeah.
We're like, well, that seems feasible.
Yeah. So, I mean, have you guys stayed gamers your whole lives? Have you continued to play games since childhood? Or had sort of the real world and adulthood jobs and things sort of derailed your gaming career?
I think after high school, of course, it derails the 6 or 7 hour days of gaming.
Yeah.
But I stayed gaming my entire life right up until Cuphead Project started.
Yeah, I was going to say the Cuphead Project is the only dead space in there. I spent a significant amount of time in the arcade, and I still, like, I compulsively collect older games, but I also have the feeling of, like, I want to beat them and collect them. So, like, the current one that I'm trying to 100% finish is the Sega Master System one, but I also want to say that I beat every game on it as well, and
so far
I'm at, like, 98% of all of it complete.
So did you even have an Xbox when you signed with Microsoft? Did either one of you have an Xbox?
Nope.
No?
I stopped buying after PlayStation
2, probably?
Oh, I inherited a PlayStation 2. I stopped buying at PlayStation 1 era, and then I did inherit a PlayStation 2, which I ended up playing a large portion of retro games on it.
Yeah. So I would have to imagine, if you're still kind of playing, and it's clearly this, you know, this bullet hell 2D side-scrolling genre is near and dear to you guys. I'm going to guess, like, you're probably big fans of Way Forward and some of these other studios that sort of their pedigree is the same thing, or is it? Are you just not even necessarily that laser focused on who's doing what and what's going on in the games industry?
Yeah, in the last 5 years, we've been pretty...
horribly out of the loop.
Yeah.
Like, you could say anything that everybody should know that happened in the last 5 years, and I'd be like, I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Right, so, you know, Microsoft bought Nintendo, and Cuphead's going to be coming on Switch now.
Yes.
Yeah.
Did you hear?
Yeah, I think we heard, we heard that, yeah.
Okay, so you touched on the mortgaging of the house and the leaving of the day jobs. Jared, when you're pouring concrete during the day, are you just designing? Are you thinking
sometimes
thinking stuff? Just working on design in your head while you're working?
Depends on what the task is. Like, if it was something that I could do as just second nature, like if I'm like I'm going to be wheeling for the next 3 hours, then I could like tune out my brain and be like, I better come up with something so when I get back, there's kind of a loose concept for what the next boss will be, and then at least I can pitch it to Chad and be like, should change from this to this to this. I don't have quite a strong visual down, but I've got a few ideas that might work. And then, you know, we talk for a bit at the night, try to get some things yep. done. Then you would wake up, redo it again.
And Chad, are you sitting? You know, I'm guessing it sounds like desk job type of scenario yep. that you're up to. Are you? Do you have like a Word doc or a spreadsheet that you're supposed to be doing your work?
The client
you've got,
work.
But you've got maybe like a design doc or something open that you're working on throughout the day.
I had a lot of different clients, so that you know projects had different deadlines. But I could always work on a few client projects, sneak in some Cuphead work, so it wouldn't have to be right at the end of the day. Like, if I felt fresher to do it right in the beginning of the day, I actually had that option to work on Cuphead for a bit and then jump back to the real job.
Where does Cuphead himself and the character and the world, where does that come from?
That just comes from a ton of brainstorming and us wanting to have a character that feels like it's from the 1930s. And
look at this guy. He's cool. How cool, how great is that character?
Well, we're super proud of him.
Yes. It's just like,
it was a lot of like iteration and time to even like brainstorm and come up with new angles. And like one of the things is like how many things have been done in cartoons and video games makes it problematic to have something original and something that stands out. So, I mean, a large portion of it is like also Chad's capability to just churn out ideas. Like, he's done his work for the day, but he's going to take time to be like, I'm going to just try to make 100 characters, see if anything sticks. And we tried everything, but we knew things like the animals were almost completely taken. Like, cartoons and video games has like destroyed it. Now, you can still take an animal and make it work, and I'm not saying all games can't have animals in them and still feel unique.
Bubsy
feel
like, and Banjo. No, and,
oh, my God. Just even the worst ones. Kamikaze, Squirrel, and... Oh. But it still has that problem where it works, and it still attracts kids, and you can't... It doesn't have to be perfectly original, but at the same time, we wanted perfectly original instead of saying, this is a really cool animal that's not used, but we gave them a unique patch over here, and their family logo is somehow attached to their wrist with a scarf, and you're like, it's just accessories on a similar character that's already existed for 50 years.
Yeah.
So that's just a series of iteration until you get experimental.
Right.
Which it did get, like, really weird, just fishbowl head guy.
Well, I almost wonder, Chad, did you draw him initially?
Yes. Yeah.
Were you, don't take this the wrong way.
Smoking crack?
Yeah, were you high at the time? Were you like, it's a cup for a head? Like, I love this guy.
Cuphead and Mugman came from the tail end of the concept phase, where we're like, none of these that we have work.
Yeah.
So then I'm like, not burned out, but just like, there's no more ideas left. So I'd be watching old cartoons and just, instead of looking at what they had on the characters, just looking in the background
or interesting.
Anything. Like, you know, there's a palm tree in the background. Okay, here's a palm tree head character.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, and it just, we went into like everything.
It was like
hammers.
A decision, I don't remember why, at what time, that was like, none of the classic formula of characters are standing out. Now, some of them would have been good and we could have made a game with them, but I don't remember exactly the moment, but it was something that's like, let's explore and get weird. Like,
I think it was just, I had all these normal designs.
Yeah.
And for a laugh, I threw in something like what an anvil for a head. And then you would be like,
but you always did that too.
This is the only anvil one that like looks cool out of this whole bunch. So I'm like, well, I'll go with that really odd idea and then just keep going. But like at the same time, researching cartoons, getting inspiration from that, but.
And, like, I still find I think it's Disney rule, don't quote me on that, but, like, the characters are only as strong as the silhouette. So, like, you can put as many, like, little bells and whistles on something, but if the silhouette doesn't stand out, then your character doesn't have, like, that much to it. Like that will, it will not be subconsciously recognizable simply. And I remember the moment you randomly just had like drawn him and you're like, check out these like next 80 pictures of stuff. And he was like a lot skinnier and spindlier in like small kind of briefs, but he had the cup for a head and the straw in it. Yeah. And like, it just instantly felt like there's something right there that's going to work out.
Don't you find it a little weird that he drinks his own like brain fluid basically to power up?
Weird in the best 30s way, right?
Yes. That's no, it's not a complaint or a criticism. It's just I chuckled at that the first time I saw it.
No, we really enjoyed that idea too. Just the... Just every idea runs by the, like, let's push it to as crazy as it can be, but make sure it's authentic. And when we saw the idea of drinking from the head, we're like, no, that's
so fast. So Anvil Head was where it sort of started
that's a loose term.
Yeah.
Because I mean,
it could have been a cactus like head. Right. It could have been a fishbowl head.
Yeah, there was just random drawings too. Like when he abandons a drawing, he usually just finishes up with something stupid. So he'll be like, this face isn't panning out. And then he's just like, I'm going to attach two wheels coming out of its ears and a propeller on the top. And then I'll make him say some dumb phrase.
Yes.
But, like, something within, when we were already knowing that it wasn't an animal or a humanoid type of character, that we made a decision to go, like, further into the depths. But the weirder ones that stood out are, like, Anvil Head isn't what it is. I don't remember if it's Spaghetti Plate Head, just Cactus Man, something.
Something
stood out,
totally.
And I knew that was the path to be chasing.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I love that. So, the getting serious, the quitting the day jobs, was it a difficult decision to put the mortgage on the house and say we're pushing all our chips to the middle of the table here?
No, we talked for 2 weeks about like if we're going to do this. Let's
were you
do
married
it, right?
at that point?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
So, your wife Maya, who's an artist and a producer on the game as well,
was of course involved in this decision.
Very
as well.
Much so. Yep. I want to ask you about her and her involvement in the project soon, but. So she's on board. She doesn't think that you're a maniac.
No, it was funny. I talked to Jared first about the idea. I ran it by her, and she was like, yeah, I think that's cool.
Like, well, the other thing is it's still a step at a time. Like, if you said right from the beginning when we were like, we're committed to making a game, we're finishing this game irregardless, let's put aside the money, let's kiss it goodbye. We had no, like, but if it doesn't make the money, we're like, it's gone. So each stage where we're like, there is fans, you're like, there's support. Oh my God, when we showed it, like, the public feedback was amazing. Yeah. And then you're like, okay, it's doing well. And you're like, and there's fan art, like, well before it released, that it was still incremental, too. It wasn't from the initial, then all the way to what the final product would be.
Nope.
We were just like, so if we were willing to take this chance, we're like, what if we just took this much more? And we're like, yeah, why not? Then a year passes, and we're like, this game is so close to our dream scope that what if we actually made our dream scope? And then we're like, so I don't think it was a long conversation.
No,
it was just like, we're either all in or we're not. And then we went, all right.
I mean, help me understand, because I try to understand the business side of games. I think that's very interesting, and it's good for gamers to try and understand that when they can to help sort of see the industry and how it works. Did you have could you have called Microsoft and gotten the money from them, but you would have had to give up a piece of the game? So is that why you decided to just like, we're going to assume all the risk because we want to own this? I'm kind of curious about that.
I don't even think we had that discussion. We just, you know, we'd been putting everything we had into it to that point for the smaller game. They were just like, well, if we make the next step.
You just didn't see it any other way.
Well, I mean, I would say that anybody half in the industry would have some sort of assumption that there is some give and take between anything.
Right, yes. So I mean, they did help.
Oh, my God.
The
they did.
Big time.
Yeah,
right?
They are amazing.
It's never coming for those assets. It's not coming to other platforms.
Yes, it's a console exclusive on Xbox.
You've said it a million
Xbox,
times, but people seem to not be quite clear on
yes.
that.
Yes.
It's unequivocally.
Yes.
It is
not coming.
It is what it is.
Yep.
But, like, how about your parents? I mean, they sound supportive, like they've always been supportive. When you tell them that you're starting a video game company, what's your parents' reaction?
I think it's the way that the reason that we're so middle ground.
Yeah, I can tell you guys are the super even keel.
The answer was like, cool.
I don't even remember any.
I don't think there's anything
like,
above that.
So you guys are doing that? Yep. Okay. That sounds like a worthwhile decision. And while you're like, well, it's a good time and opportunity, and you're young enough, you take a chance. Well, you can.
Well, and recently our dad kind of caught on to the whole, like,
they understand it's a thing.
Yeah, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
But before it was even like, he wouldn't have had a clue about anything in the video game industry, he wasn't like, wait a second, you haven't done research and you haven't planned. He was just like, this sounds like a good idea if you guys are.
I think more accepting on, if this is like something you guys love and you want to do, that's cool.
Wow, that's, how great is that?
No, it's the best thing in the world.
That's incredible. That's no wonder you guys are so well adjusted. It sounds like you had awesome.
I don't know about well adjusted, but we're calm.
Yeah. So, I wouldn't make that claim either.
Even when it gets to the mortgage time, they're not like, whoa, no. Don't be silly, guys.
Because I think when our dad started his company, it was.
Yeah, it was the same thing.
I had to take a risk.
He realized you have to put up so much money, and then if you wanted a chance to be like a slightly bigger operation, you're going to have to get a piece of land, put a warehouse on it, and something.
Yeah.
Like, he understood all business starts with you putting your money in investment.
He had built something
absolutely.
From the ground up himself, and so this was just you guys doing the same thing.
Yeah, so
I don't even remember much of a conversation at all. It was just like, it was just basically telling him and saying, this is what we're doing and planning, and we're really interested in doing this. And he was like, of course, and absolutely.
Yeah.
Just not pretty simple. We didn't have to, like, have a meeting later. He called one late night and was like, I've been thinking because when I looked on stats online, nothing came back. He was just like, I'm so glad you guys are following what you're into.
Yeah.
Well, so great.
Of course, everybody, like, from when we were younger, our parents knew that we loved games.
With the amount of time we spent gaming, they were like,
hope to God,
all this time has paid off for something.
I love that. Because I'm lucky. My parents were that way too. When I said, I want to like write about video games, like write for a video game magazine. I went to journalism school, and they were never like, that's ridiculous, get a real job. So it's
I think you need that
critical
support when you're younger too.
Yeah, you do. Because you don't know yet. You don't know what the right thing is to do. So did anyone, friends, neighbors, even, I'm wondering, I don't know if you had to sort of, if anyone at the bank asks what you're doing, did anyone in your life go, you're nuts?
For sure. I'm not going to be naming names or something.
Well, you can if you want. I mean,
you're going to get it. But, no, of course, there were some people who were more leery and more like, why don't you do more of something that's working within the industry now? Why don't you follow something, a trend or something that's working? Because who knows? And we didn't know either. They're like, who knows if, like, this cartoon idea, who knows if people will like it? Just because you guys really like it, they're like, it's a lot of work to take on. And for something that's not proven, maybe go down a regular route or an. It just didn't seem interesting. Like, if I'm going to, and I didn't expect it to be this long of a project.
Yeah.
But if I'm going to start a project, I want to be working on something I'm really interested and be proud of when we're done.
We talked about that when we started, too. Like, if we're making a game, let's make sure we both love the game concept and love the visual aspect of it, because we're going to be looking at this
for a while.
All the time. So
I also think every kid has had the same thought from playing anything in the 8-bit, 16-bit era, is you, initially when you're young enough, you translate the visual into the character that you want it to be, and you don't even see it as pixel art. Then when you grow up, you have like a strong appreciation for pixel art.
Definitely.
But you always thought, like, video games are cartoons, or why these universes are so similar that why wouldn't they cross over?
True. I never really
so
thought about it
enough. Wasn't that, like, weird of a, like, groundbreaking. It was something that everybody always feels.
Yeah.
It's just when we tried it and then looked at it and went, oh my God, if that was a game that you played, it would be beautiful to us.
Yeah.
And then, sure, there's still like a few naysayers going, don't rock the boat.
So those people in your life, have you since mailed them a plush Cuphead and like a screenshot of the Steam sales rankings with like a note that says, who's laughing now? Love, Jared and Chad.
I think it would have to be. It would have to be something far worse than faltering like an idea or trying to be. Because I know it always comes from the angle of like they're trying to help make the right choice.
They're just concerned for your well-being, really.
So I'm spiteful from time to time if somebody messes.
But over time, too, a lot of people who are like, oh, this is risky or whatever, you know, as the more reception and things happen, some people just turn to like,
the risk lowers, right?
The further along.
All of a sudden, the idea that we're doing is cool again.
Yeah. So what did you ever, it sounds like the answer is no, based on what I'm learning about you guys here, but what if Cuphead hadn't done well? Was that even ever a consideration?
I have an imagination of it.
Yeah.
Always reserve just a little bit of the money. Like, save something on a credit card.
Yeah.
So you can binge drink, try harder drugs, something to wash the feeling away, and then, like, have nights of probably crying, but the next one's joyous because you still made a game that you love. So you sing songs that you don't even know the lyrics to, but you're drunk enough that you're like, it's me, and I'm just like this band, and then get back to work and get back to work hard, double time the construction until you've paid yourself back to a comfortable level, and then
it was never a real fear. Like, we thought if somehow the game tanked when we originally started, we're like, it tanks.
To an extent. I think for you, you're like, I've got a double income and me and the wife, and we could approach this and that. I had no worry. I was like, I believe in this. I believe in the project. I believe in the response from the fans and the response from what people are saying and people who have hands-on experience. Like, it seems like there's no way you couldn't make your money back.
Or break even.
Like, yeah.
So
it's like, it doesn't seem like a risk at all. But if it did magically go south, I think I would have been, like, a hint depressed for a bit, but I have a good enough attitude and ability to suffer through a few bad years that I'd be like, I'd bounce back.
Well, and it sounds
live
like,
in a car for a bit.
It sounds like your dad would just be, your super supportive parents, your dad would be like, come on back.
Oh, yeah.
To work.
Oh, absolutely. The work is always there.
Yeah. God, that's so great. At what point do you start hearing from maybe like a, you sign with ID at Xbox, Chris Charla and his team. At what point does Phil Spencer reach out? Like, because clearly, word of this game, there are certain games, like last year it was Inside, where it was just like, that's what everybody pays attention to, and you guys had come along before that, before ultimately releasing this year. Do industry people start sort of reaching out with, like, kind words or wanting to help in some way? Or at what point do you start gaining kind of the notoriety around the industry?
I think after 2015 E3, we definitely had a lot more, you know, publisher asks and, you know, partnership things and ideas that were passed in front of us. But I don't, like, there's no real big, it just, after the 2015, it just kind of kept coming as a trickle. Like, you know, every month there'd be 3 or 4 emails from, you know, somebody in the industry talking about, you know, we could do this with Cuphead, or maybe on your next project you could do this with our property.
Right.
But nothing huge stand out, just kind of ongoing stuff.
So, and that that brings me to the fact that Microsoft seemed to really leave you guys alone during development. Like, they did
absolutely
not meddle for good or for bad. And I'm not saying publishers' involvement's not always a bad thing, but it seems like they left you alone. So what was their role in the project?
Well, I think they go into every project differently. And if we were a team that kind of needed some hands-on, they'd be there. But they knew, like, just leave us alone.
Even though you're first-time developers, they weren't like, we know better than you.
Microsoft,
let's just send in a producer.
See into your heart. See who, like, the purest being that you are. And then after that, and you've been, like, accepted in, and they're like, I trust what you're up to.
I think it's the idea.
We always just had that relationship. It was just simple conversations, and they were like, this is fantastic.
Their ID team.
We know you're working.
That's
the best.
What it is. Like, their ID team just, they trust their intuition, and that's kind of how they run that whole thing, and that's why it's, like, amazing.
Yeah, and clearly their trust in you has paid off.
And for the most part, Microsoft is just like, hey, you guys keep doing what you're doing, and, you know, we'll arrange some events and stuff to happen. And
yeah.
That was
how many trade shows have you guys and events have you guys been to and shown the game at over the last 4 or 5 years?
That we've personally been to, or the game's
the been game at? Has been at.
Don't remember.
Like probably 4 or 5 major ones
right?
a year.
Yeah. That's a lot.
Yeah,
that's a lot.
Well, and especially when you know there's always that little bit of can we get some assets ready for around this show?
And you got guys like me hounding you for. Yeah. Hey, we want to show your game. Can we get some new stuff?
Yes.
Like, I'm busy.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a little busy working on the game. Which one of you fell in love with animation first? And this, I want to get into where this 1930s and sort of Steamboat Willie inspired animation style came from.
I think my first memory of enjoying cartoons is sitting beside you. We were both enjoying them.
Yeah, I mean, like, if I don't remember any key moment that's any different. We just both seemed to love animation.
Yeah.
And as brothers, you would play video games, watch cartoons, watch movies and things together. I mean, if I had to go on a limb, I would just say, just due to the fact that he's older, he probably had an appreciation for me.
Slightly before
you. That'd be my guess.
Yeah. But we both grew up loving that, and for some odd chance, our parents had
these old films in our neighborhood.
And the stores, exactly. Like Silly Symphonies was an easy thing to get.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm. As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, motion sounds something like this. McKissick helps you experience the magic of motion. With over 200 patents and easy on, easy off technology, you'll never have to touch your shoes again. There are hundreds of styles and colors, plus a squish like nothing you've ever felt. For a limited time, get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Watch. So just, it's happenstance that we love this era.
What were some of your favorite either cartoons or animated movies as kids?
As kids, like, I think I know the Skeleton Dance, like the classic Silly Symphonies was definitely like a...
That stands
out in my mind as, like, I loved it when I was young. I still love it. But it was just, it seemed so different. Like, you'd watch a cartoon from the era we were born in, and it would have this plot and a story, and, you know, some things happen and people talk. And then you watch the Skeleton Dance, and it's skeletons dancing around, and that's the whole idea of the story. So we were drawn to that weirdness.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's something, it must be, like, the strange and the macabre just a bit, because I'm also, like, a big horror show person. So I'm like, maybe that was just always there, that we're like, these cartoons are good, but these old ones are just weird. Like, they just always have, like, just a hint of a nightmare. It's still, like, really fun, but there's something about it that's, like, a little spookier. And that must have been what stuck, because we could have been watching other things, and when you have enough bargain bin VHS tapes, we could have chose anything, or we could have turned the TV on and been like, yay, this is coming back on, but we're like, let's watch this collection again.
Yeah.
I don't know why.
So when you land on Cuphead, has the decision already been made at this point that it's going to be entirely hand-drawn old school, or did Cuphead start as like a polygonal textured, you know, kind of more traditionally animated video game?
When we're doing pre-production very part-time, you know, once a week.
Yeah.
We started, and Cuphead didn't exist, so we were trying to find first the style of game before we design a character.
Right.
Because I think I really believed that, like, you can't really design a character and then go choose a style.
Shoehorn it, yeah.
Yeah.
Because now you have to redesign the character anyways. So we just went through a whole list of different ideas, you know, using marker, using watercolor on every frame of animation. And back then we were thinking, you know, it's going to animate very rigidly, and it's not going to be drawn at 24 frames a second. So we could experiment more. We tried a bunch of stuff. And as a joke, we always said, what if we made it look like an old cartoon? And I'd never animated. Of course, Jared can't animate.
No, I can't.
So we always pushed that one off to the side, even though we made some screenshots and concept art, and we're like, it's cool, but how are we going to get that done? So we kind of kept it going down the path, and we always came back to, like, this looks way better than any of these other things. And when we showed our peers and friends and they said, like, this is the only thing you should work on, like, this style is amazing, then I was like, well, I'll just teach myself animation and we'll jump in.
So then, because you were telling me off air earlier, so at one point, your wife Maya sits down and basically just, like, nails it?
Well, yeah, so the game is hand-drawn,
yes,
hand-inked, and the backgrounds are all watercolor.
Right.
So initially, I thought, oh, I could handle this all.
Yeah.
I'll do everything, including, you know, every step of the way. And I was inking at that time, and I think it was even maybe finishing something for E3. And Maya came in and was like she loves calligraphy when she was growing up and, you know, loves doodling and all that kind of stuff. She was like, I should try this. Like, I think, like, this looks fun. I would love to do it. And I was like, sure, maybe you could help out. So her first test defeated any of my art skill in inking, so we just said from that day on, nope, you're leading the entire inking team by yourself.
So she did all this.
All the final art is 98% Maya's work.
With no, does she have formal training?
Nope, zero formal training.
Well,
she's just good at everything. Like, she might be the most talented person. I would say if any company was going to poach somebody at random.
Don't reach out,
offer her enough money. It doesn't matter what the job is, I guarantee she will be better than most people at it in a short period of time.
Wow. So what was her day job? Because she went full-time with MDHR as well, right? Joined the band, joined the family.
Yeah, so she was in the banking industry before, in the IT sector.
Yeah.
Doing Microsoft.
You guys are like
stuff.
Superheroes. You realize that? Where you have your like day job, secret Clark Kent kind of identities, and then it was like there's like this Justice League,
Well, her story's a little funny.
Avengers-type thing.
She was super busy while she was in the financial industry. Yeah. And then we had our first daughter, and she was on mat leave staying at home, because Canada lets you have lots of months to stay at home, of course. And it was during that mat leave where she was like, hey, let me attempt this.
Yeah.
And she continued on during her mat leave to keep inking. And then when it came up and the bank was like, hey, you're coming back to work? It was like, nope.
Wow. That is cool.
No, it's really cool.
That is an amazing story. What, while we're on the subject of our, I know there, I'm sure there are some husband and wife developer teams and couples that work on games together out there, but we don't hear about them. I mean, and it's a fascinating topic to me because game development has been such a, well, number one, a rather male dominated industry
for sure.
By and large, and one where, I mean, it's working. I always think it's interesting. Any family that works together, so they're there. You know, they're working together all day, and they've got the home life.
Yes.
So with game development, which of course involves a lot of long hours and long years to get a project done, how is it working with your spouse? Is it tough to sort of draw the line between? Okay, well, work time's over. It's because you know you're lead designer, is that the
actor? Jared's lead designer.
Jared's lead designer.
Creative director.
Creative director, okay.
Yeah.
So you are technically the boss. I mean, do you sort of have the final word on things?
Yeah, I have the final look of like,
but
yes.
She's a producer as well as...
Yes.
So, you know, is there any sort of butting of heads
well,
on
there's
the project?
Yeah, on the producer side of things, there's a little more than Maya's the boss
at
that time, right?
Yeah.
But... We're really like we're ultimate best friends. So like it was seamless. It worked so easily. I think the difficult part that it didn't really take it like it took a toll, but not nothing crazy was that it was hard to separate work and life because it just kept going. Like the game's not going to finish itself. So after supper is over and the kids are in bed, well, let's go back into the office and continue working until we're tired.
I mean, I hope I'm not overstepping my bounds by asking this, but do you need, are there times during the Cuphead project where you need to just have like a, okay, we've got the sitter, we're going to go on a date, no Cuphead talk? Like, are there sort of times where you just have to step away together and have your own time without the game involved?
And there wasn't so much time that we could be doing that enough. And especially near the end of the project, there was none.
Yeah.
But yeah, we definitely needed that alone time to like not talk about anything but just regular life stuff.
Right.
And we were talking about this last night too. It feels really weird. It's hard when you're in the space of like really wrapping up a game. The social aspect of life feels weird again. Like even like
if you haven't had it in
years. You're working on this project so long
it's strange.
You're having supper and you're still talking about Cuphead and what's our next step and what's the decision on this. Then you go out for this date and your brain's like, oh, we're supposed to talk about other things now. You know, like it was definitely like a challenge, but
I believe you told me your daughter's 4. Is that correct?
Yeah, she's turning 4.
So has literally grown up during the Cuphead project. Does your daughter know Cuphead and Mugman by name and all?
Of course.
Like, is it just like part of her daily life? Like, they're I don't know if there's art around the house on the walls.
Oh, she has a Cuphead blanket.
Sleeping. Sleep with a Cuphead plushie, maybe.
Yeah, she's a little more like princess doll still.
Sure,
so those kind of sit by the side. But yeah, no, she definitely knows. Like, even mistaken some things. If somebody's looking at even a newer cartoon, she might be like, "Is that Cuphead?" But yeah, she knows it for sure.
Is working on a video game together the ultimate test of a marriage?
Like, it might be. Yeah, when you're working like 6 feet away from each other the entire time. Yeah, it didn't test us because again we're best friends. But I think it would be a good litmus test.
That's awesome.
For a lot of marriages.
So, do you guys now like? Is there any student, is there a thought now that you've, because you all work separately, independently, so
yes.
You're sort of scattered around. Is there a thought now that, like, hey, well, this worked, to getting a proper studio space and all, you know, working together in a in.
We haven't had, like, much time to breathe or think about anything in life. And then everything that is in life that you push off 100% for, like, the last 8 months
right.
is all sitting there. So when you're done, you're like, all right, now I got to complete all this other stuff that I didn't do.
Yeah.
That, yeah, no, we don't have any concrete plans or things.
No, we barely have even talked about, like, what are we doing in the next 2 weeks?
Right, so. But that's probably good, right? That feel good, where you don't have to, you don't have that next milestone to hit.
Yeah, but internally, we're like, the next milestone is we have to, like, plan where we're going from here. Yeah. So it's kind of like a always knocking.
Yeah, the head's
door.
Still cycling.
Yeah,
for sure.
So we touched on this a little bit, but the public's first reaction when it starts to pick up, and then you mentioned specifically E3 2015 with the 3 million. By the way, that's just the Xbox YouTube channel. That's excluding your YouTube channel, our YouTube channel, everyone's YouTube channel.
Which is insane.
Was there a point after that trailer in E3 2015 where anything sort of sunk in, or it became, like, way more real, or any sort of change in your thinking or awareness of the public's perception of the game?
I don't know. I also think, like, I'm a person, like, I'm a different breed, I believe. So certain things, like our first E3, when we were done, I was like, that was fantastic. That was really exciting and fun. I want to go somewhere, have a drink. And people are like, have you checked out things? Have you seen what's on Twitter? Have you looked at this? Do you even know what the videos are saying? And I was like,
Yeah.
We'll get to that in a day or two or a week.
Right. No and hot takes for Jared Moldenhauer.
No. I think we just took it in over time. And, like, again, both being, like, here and never here, we're just like, hey, this is really cool. Like, it's inside we're super excited, but on the outside it's just like, this is awesome. Like, everything, like...
Yeah.
This is better than we ever could have imagined. Like, it's allowing us to now have the conversation of bringing back our dream scope and a bunch of other things. And
absolutely. I think that also, like, chipping away at it, like, maybe I don't daydream enough that, like, in an instant I'm not like, holy, depends on how this goes, and I better find out all the information right now so we can go back to the hotel and start making plans for the business. It was just like, I will find out. We'll pay attention. There's going to be a lot of stuff said over the next few weeks. So when there's time, we're going to look at it. And then based on that, we can have a talk or a conversation.
Yep.
But I think because you take it in little chunks, eventually by the time we sit down and then we're like, the reception's well.
Yep.
And every time it just felt like the same conversation. Like, so do you think it's worth putting in this much more? And we're like, yep. Hey, so you want to go back and watch that movie tonight? Yep.
Yes.
So what was... What was the original version of the game? Like, what was the thing you intended to ship originally? Now that we have the game and now I know what it is,
It was always like,
thing?
I wouldn't have numbers, but it was always within what our original budget was. So it was smaller. An easy way to say it
would
be like,
unless you're talking about the dream scope.
No, I'm talking about, like, when
what did we reduce it to?
Yeah, no, before you spun it up to what shipped.
Yeah.
What was it going to be?
It would be around, but we were always planning to do, like, with the money we put in and the time we have, that we'd be willing to work on adding more things at that point. But it was going to be, like, around that, 8 bosses,
okay.
And kind
yeah.
of like a little final area.
Yeah.
But I mean, if all things were going well, it could have been 10
or
plus
12.
Something.
Okay.
Like, that was the initial
And I think our,
idea.
Our initial plan was no overworld, just
a really
basic
stripped
select
down.
Screen
right.
where you almost like a fighting game where you just choose the battles.
And famously, the run and gun sections came in later.
Yes, that was in our original dream scope of, let's make a boss-heavy game, and we'll kind of pepper these, like, run and gun levels in. But, of course, we were... looked at it and said, there's no way in hell we're ever going to do this. So let's do a little simple 8-boss game and focus on the bosses.
So you guys kind of flipped the script, because old school games, you know, your Contras were the opposite. It was all the, it was a bunch of run and gun levels and then a boss.
Yeah.
You guys have a bunch of boss levels and then, well, all right, have a break with a run and gun level.
I think we always thought the idea was so fun to make a game that felt like every boss was the final boss of a game you played as a kid.
Yeah.
And that's what we were shooting for.
Yeah, it was making the bosses more like a level. Like, if everything is attached to a level, like, even if you say it's pretty short, it takes into a part, like, how hard you can make a boss. Or, like, how many patterns you could expect a person to play through. Because you don't want the time to keep extending.
Right.
So it was exciting to be like, what if everything was like a final boss? Like, had 2 to 3 to 4 forms, and we could make that the core basis of the game. And we're like, that sounds like a really fun concept.
Yeah. A lot of developers and publishers now are, you know, focus testing is huge in the games industry because, you want to sell as many copies as possible, get as many people playing. How was difficulty tuning handled? Was it just you guys, or do you bring in some people to help kind of get an idea of, like, is this too hard? Is this too easy? Because for a while, your game was attending all these trade shows and just punishing us media folks. So, like, how did that process go?
Well, obviously, we didn't have money for focus groups.
Yes.
So
Microsoft does.
True, but I don't think they would have ever.
Also, the other thing is, like, we, from the beginning, we were like, we want this to be a game that we would really like to look at, we would really like to play, and more of an homage to the older era, too, which means the difficulty has to be somewhat challenging.
Yeah.
And once we were determined on that, we definitely took, watch people play, see where capabilities lie, if something's maybe a little too hard. So lots of the festivals and seeing fans play definitely helped. But, we have a core group of gamers between us. So I could invite over, like, a group of people I used to play Street Fighter with, or some people that I'd always see at the arcade, or a few friends that are, like, do, like, some speed running or something. And then also test with people who never play games. And partway through, or part of it was, like, trying to adjust something down to a person who's never played a game was, to me, no longer fun. And since the core design was already done by a certain point, like, the intention would have had to be there for it to play well, knowing how much easier you were going to make it. So with the intention fully and lots of ideas being concepted and done, it wouldn't have been too practical to try to reverse it at that point match the audience that, like, may or may not do it. I also personally believe, like, the idea of difficulty is, like, just a loose concept. It's, every gamer has a different line for what that is, yet every gamer gets some sense of satisfaction of overcoming something.
Yes.
So there's a whole broad spectrum of gamers, and to get that feeling for, like, or people like us or our friends group, it needs to match sort of the way we had it, which was why we're like, if we're still having fun, and we've been working on this long enough, and if I still don't, like, hate the hell out of this boss, if I can actually play it and be like, all right, I'm like, it must be decent for people like us.
Well, and we kept some of our really good gamer friends in the dark on purpose, because we could work on the game and do everything, and then we could have them come in fresh.
Yeah.
And we knew they were amazing gamers, so just seeing them take a pass at the game and going, oh, that one thing is, like, for because they didn't know it was there, and we've been playing long enough and think, oh, this part's really easy. That one thing is nearly impossible for, like, a, you know,
super believer. Believe at some point, the genie was, like, 2 times as hard. 2.5 times as hard.
I can sweat that one already. So is that the secret to good art? Is making something that you think is good and not worrying about what everybody else thinks? And
to an extent,
I think that is our mission. Is we just the entire time, as long as we love it, like, that's the end goal.
Is there too much of that focus testing? Let's make sure everybody is happy, kind of thing going on.
Well,
in this
it depends
industry?
Because there's so many types of gamers and so many types of people that, like, you need a diverse swath of games. So maybe something that is focused, tested to perfection actually is what a large portion of people want.
Yeah.
So I would just say the most diversity that you can possibly have within the industry is the most interesting way of approaching it.
Yeah.
Like, same thing would go, in my opinion, for things like movies and other arts, is you can never really argue with having diversity. It would be like saying, sure, I only like elite cinema, so... I think all blockbusters should never exist again because lots of them are focus tested or rely heavily on the name is known. And I'm like, but there's still something enjoyable from them. You don't eliminate all things. You expand upon and allow more people to make more interesting things because there's always somebody who enjoys it.
Yeah. Can you tell that to a lot of gamers out there? I think the gaming community suffers from that kind of attitude a little bit sometimes. But, all right, the game's done. It comes out. How did you guys feel when the review... You're so even keel. Are you moved at all when these big-time awesome reviews start coming in?
Yeah, I definitely will.
Yeah?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah,
like that's... Because originally when we were talking, we were like, you know, the reviews in our mind were like in that low 70s, you know, range.
Yeah, I was like, I was thinking we could hit like a 80, maybe like a
that, that would be
above,
our high end. Yeah.
Because it's a retro game.
Yeah.
I totally accept and take on the fact that it's a little bit challenging. And I was like, that's probably going to turn off some people, and that's totally fine.
Sure.
So I was like, if we hit that 80s, it's going to be exciting. So when the first bunch came in, it was definitely like, oh my god.
Like what the hell happened?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And just like how, like, just it feels, at least to us, because we work in a bubble, that the industry doesn't really enjoy like an older retro challenging game to the scope that, you know, Cuphead came out and reached.
Yeah.
But seeing this is just like, my god.
Is there a feeling? Is there a celebration when you get the word that it's sold that millionth copy in that first week or so?
The millionth copy is like
gone platinum.
Yes, like that number and that goal wasn't in our hearts. As if we hit that, we're happy. Seeing how the game sold from day one and kept creeping up was definitely way more of like, where the hell is this coming out of? So, again, it's just baby steps. When it builds up to the million, this initial part, watching this initial part, was way more exciting.
Yeah.
And then, of course, reaching that milestone is like a...
Oh, yeah, just, it's an amazing opportunity. Yeah, it feels like, thanks to all the fans, thanks to all the critics, thanks to all the everything for supporting it, for giving us a chance to move on and make another game. And yeah, it's amazing. Like, but I also didn't, like you said, it didn't feel like I was like, it's when it hits a million, I've got a bottle of scotch I'm going to crack. I was like, when that first speed run comes out, I'm going to sit down and crack a bottle of scotch.
Yes.
But yeah, it's still...
No, it's,
like, it's still way over my head, and I also think from like being stuck in a bubble, we're stuck in a bare room for a long enough period of time that maybe it'll hit me later too. That my expectations were like, we'll never lifetime hit a million.
Yeah.
So now that it did,
that was my next question. So I'm not going to ask you whatever your expectations were, but it was not a million.
No, I didn't
this has exceeded the expectation.
Yeah, by far. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's really cemented and it's reassured us that there is room for these 2D like games that we love plus traditional media and traditional animation. Like that in itself is like the biggest cool thing.
And I think it is like that's an amazing feeling to be like we were a part of something that you could say like difficulty is too much of an issue and you still kind of roll with it, or that 2D is not dead, but like 2D isn't something to necessarily follow, and to realize how many people support it, and realize how many people are willing to, like, the amount of people I've met or seen that were like, I can't play games like this, and they were like, but I played it, and like the soundtrack drove me forward, and each next thing was such a treat that they're like, you know what? By the end of like a week, they're like, The first parts all kind of feel a little easy. And I'm like, you learned. You learned. Like, that's the best feeling to think that people took something that we're like, we really like, I doubt everybody will like this as much as we appreciate it. But then to find out that a lot of people do, and then a lot of people were actually willing to take this chance and embrace it. And I'm like, that's an amazing
game. Yeah, it's definitely like beautiful.
When the game comes out, reviews are coming in, sales numbers are piling up. Do you get, does a Phil Spencer or any other like sort of industry people sort of call, reach out, congratulate you, or have any sort of comment on the game?
Well, I think a week later, we got like a, hey, we have to jump on this call from Microsoft. Make sure you're both on. It's pretty important. We're like, okay. Now, that day was like the first time I could take a break, so I was going to head off and go water skiing. But we jump on the call, and it's like, hey, Phil Spencer's on the line. And yeah, we got a congrats. And
that's awesome.
It's awesome that you guys like followed your dream and like it, you know, ended up like this. So it was really cool.
That's so great.
Yeah.
So I think that this game, given what is in it, you know, you've talked about how the scope, the dream scope, and how it started smaller and ended up, you know, all the run and gun levels and everything that's in the game. I think it could have done just as well at $30 or even $40 maybe. Is there the content's there? So, I mean, be honest, are you guys wishing that maybe you charged a little bit more for it
a million
copies later?
No, 100% was committed to the price. There were some people being like, why don't you at least $24.99 or why don't you $29.90? Like, maybe consider things. And I just feel like
I think we both
1999 has like a lot of strong suits. Like it's a good indie price. Like it seems like a fair indie price. It's also in my mind, this is like marketing speak thought, but I'm like, it's an impulse purchase price.
Yes.
Because
that's true.
There are some people who you would look past $30 and then wait for the sale, but if things pass, you go, well, I'm not gonna do it. Or just somebody who goes like, I would support something like this because I enjoy animation, but I'm not sure if I'd enjoy the game. I wouldn't blame them for not wanting to buy it at $39.99, but I could see more people being like, $20 is a reasonable.
And we got a lot of people like that just over the years, like emailing us or meeting them at places when we went out to show the game. Of like, you know, I love animation, or, you know, I just really love art and what you guys are doing. I have no interest in video games at all, but I really want to buy this game. So they're almost treating it like an art book instead of like buying a game.
That's flattering, right?
No, it's amazing.
Absolutely.
So this $20 price, like in our minds, felt like it's just fair across the board. Like you get a cool game, or you're just picking it up because you really like the art or the music, which is legendary.
Maybe there's a $4.99 apology to anybody who's like, too difficult. And you're like, well, you didn't. It wasn't $24.99.
Difficulty discount. Is it safe to say that the house is no longer in jeopardy? That the mortgage.
Yes,
will
I think it's safe to say
it will be paid back.
And some property tax might.
Property tax
back.
Is still sitting there. It's like, how do you make money? And then you're like, you can make some money if you don't pay things that you owe. So there's still a bunch of things sitting that I really need to pay.
Well, and credit cards that rack up over time to live. So.
But you don't have to pay them necessarily once they're maxed.
You also don't have to live in your house. You could live in government housing. Some people call it jail. What lessons have you guys learned that might help make the process smoother for the next game?
Well, I think one of the main processes of going into the next game, if we're planning a scope a certain size and committing to it, will be like proper planning, because this game has just been small steps. Let's do this small chunk.
Yeah.
And then you work on that small chunk with no real intention of bringing some of the dream scope in. So there's some learning lessons. Like as we're going, we realize, okay, listen, if we're going to do overworlds, let's not design them right now because we're not quite sure how much of our dream scope we're going to pull in.
Right.
And I still don't know how we pulled off like 99.9% of our dream scope being in this game, but turns out we did.
Yeah. I don't know. I was going to be honest, I slightly zoned out, and I'm like, he's carrying this
one.
That is the absolute truth.
Yeah. Well, is it okay if it takes 4 or 5 years again, or is that part of it that you guys would like to try and... cut down on a little bit.
I think that's more of a, this is the next step in our process of, like, let's figure out what we want to do first.
Yeah. And then probably easy at this point to churn one out yearly.
Yes, of course.
Like a committed date yearly probably
like
would be.
Yeah.
Easy, because it's just, you just have to animate it. It should be, we should be able to, like, speed it up like
this. Yeah, you know, Cuphead 2K19. Yeah. Coming on October 7th. has anyone come to you about doing an actual Cuphead animated series? Is there interest in the IP from outside the video game industry?
I think there's some general noise. There's no real.
Yeah, there's nothing that we're specifically talking to or doing currently.
I mean, I feel like a Netflix needs to come to your house and pay you.
That
a bunch
would be
of money
really cool.
And do a 12 episode run.
Hey, if
of,
Netflix
of
wants
Deal with
to,
the Devil.
If Disney wants to say, can we make a fully animated, full feature film? Like, I'm open to ideas. If they want to, let's make it happen.
Well, yeah. Now that so you guys. Own the IP outright, I presume.
Yes. Yep, 100%.
Now that the game's a giant success, that's got to feel really good, right? Like, you made a thing and you totally own it, and there's no one that can F with it.
Yeah,
you're the only one.
Any moment, we can just burn it all and bury it, and it never
comes back.
Like
the Joker
back.
With the pile of money, where he's like, I'm only burning my half. That's you.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No, that does feel awesome. I think it's the better feeling is looking back on this and looking at the success and the reviews and all of this and knowing that, hey, this we created this. Because sometimes we don't pull ourselves out of the project enough to look at it.
Yeah.
So it almost feels like, even when I see this, I'm like, oh, yeah, this is somebody else's game, but it's ours. And, like, the team came together and we made this amazing game. And it, yeah.
So I feel like the merch game needs stepping up now, guys. We got the IP is awesome. The characters are great. We need more plushies. We need more T-shirts, App Store emoji packs.
Well,
let's go.
Yeah, that side of marketing is kind of ramping up.
Yeah. And,
you need to finish a game first before you have, like, the chance to, like, approach all the possible avenues. So, yeah, we'll be on it. Things will be happening.
I definitely want to. I'm going to get a Cuphead plushie the second that exists. Those need to happen.
And they will happen.
They will happen.
Yep.
I can't wait. Finally, I have to ask, since you've been kind enough to come all this way, and now I have you on camera and there's nothing you can do about it, what is next? I'm going to guess, you've already alluded to it, you're not going back to those old jobs. The game thing's working.
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe
we're going to go back?
Just to, like, have a nice balance to really be like, okay, that was game. Maybe the next 5 years we pour concrete.
Oh, yeah, that's not a bad idea.
And also good ideas came while pouring concrete, so maybe it just goes.
Maybe you needed that.
And, but
right,
no,
serious,
we
please.
Need to.
Well, no, our real, like the real thing is now that with the success of Cuphead, we're going to make games. And like,
yes.
We want to keep making
games.
That's
what I want to hear.
So that's the plan.
Yeah.
We're going to keep making games. What that is, when that happens, this is stuff that we haven't even really been talking
about. We haven't had a lot of time to, like, sit down and make plans.
Well, two sub-questions off of that thread would be, I'm not expecting you to announce your next game right here, although you're very welcome to.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just reminded
World exclusive?
IGN's been very kind to you over the last number of years.
Yeah,
you could
for
definitely
sure.
announce it here, but will you be sticking to hand-drawn animation, or is there some other passion with game making that you would like to pursue?
I think it would be a shame. Like, that is a large part of it, is, like, the love of 2D animation.
Yeah.
And the idea of, like, being a company that actually allows, like, so many talented people out there don't have the opportunity to use their talents in any which way. And most of the companies and avenues that you used to have switched to 3D, and times do change. But I want to always be a part of that.
Yeah.
And yeah, you had something.
Yeah, like we love animation. We loved, like, the whole idea as we grew up, 16-bit generation, the 32-bit generation came out. We saw, like, you know, higher quality 2D, and then it just faded away. And there's still, don't get me wrong, there's still amazing 2D games being made, but the mainstream 2D died. So it never, the AAA studios never pushed this anywhere. So the fact that we can do something that looks like a cartoon is, like, just the best thing ever. So we're going to make sure we could continue down this traditionally classical animation, traditional
we
media.
Also have a team of like amazing, amazing talented people. It would be weird to be like, thanks, that was amazing, but we're going 3D. Don't need any of you. Don't care what happens to you. Bye.
Well, you better hope that like Maya doesn't break her wrist in like in a water skiing accident or something. If you're going to stick down the path.
Well, I just heard today on lunch that she fell down the stairs and hurt her arm.
Oh no, that's good. I hope she's okay.
No, I think
she is.
Yeah, she is.
We wouldn't have shared that if it was like, and she's in her grave.
No,
no.
Okay, so then the other question off of that thread would be, you did Cuphead is a success, the characters are cool, mm-hmm. we've got the merch coming, everybody loves the game and the IP, so are you done with Cuphead, or do you need a break from Cuphead? Like is it sort of a one and done, like, all right, well, we did that, let's do a new thing, or might we see these two fine young men mm-hmm. again?
Well, I guaranteed you'll see Cuphead at some point.
Yes.
At some point.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, what are plans, what are we distinctly doing next, there's been zero time to really breathe or think.
We might have had two 30-minute chats about the future.
Because I could see how you might either be like, all right, well, let's keep this thing rolling. Let's Cuphead 2, let's roll. Or you could be like, we've been drawing this guy for 4 years. Let's take a break and do something else and come back to him later.
Yeah. I did promise a long time ago Cuphead Horse Racer 2 in an interview. So
you were definitely being like real and true about that.
Yes.
So maybe we have to live
up to that.
You're
clearly not a sarcastic person at all, Jared.
No.
At all. But seriously, guys, this has been a supreme pleasure for me to speak to both of you. It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
I've been knocking on your door for a long, long time, trying to get you in here to talk through your story, because I think it's a wonderful, fascinating story of you know, it sounds cheesy, but of following your dreams. And you
That's
guys
exactly
did it.
What
you
it
followed
is.
It, and you put in the work, and you had the support of your family, and I just congratulate you guys, and I thank you for Cuphead. It's my favorite Xbox game this year.
Oh, thank you so much.
And I would not at all be surprised if you will be needing to build a trophy case in the house. I'm not even joking. Make a lot of space for some trophies, whether it's, you know, Best Art Direction, all these, you know, IGN and all these places. We're going to be doing our Game of the Year awards soon. And keep some shelf space handy.
Bless your soul. Thank you.
So thank you both so much. Chad Moldenhauer, Jared Moldenhauer, this has been IGN Unfiltered, again, where I get to sit down with the best, brightest, most fascinating minds in the games industry each and every month. So check us out on YouTube, also on your favorite podcast service, too. I know this is an hour plus of this face right here is not maybe the best idea. So audio could be the way to go. However you check this out, I do appreciate you checking out this show. So I'll be back next month. Chad, Jared, thank you so much. And for much more, keep it tuned right here to IGN.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts, with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.